Thanks for joining us. This week we visit Rubens at the Royal Academy, the Changeling at the Wanamaker Playhouse, and Premium's interim projects back at the RA. Rubens didn't just paint fatties. The cracking new show at the Royal Academy is at pains to point out that there were many other elements to his talent. He wasn't even just an artist. Diplomacy and spying were also on his CV. Mixing arts and intrigue at that time didn't always bring success and long life, see Christopher Marlowe. But Peter Paul Rubens not only kept his head, he thrived, was knighted, and bought a large country estate near Rotterdam. Oddly for a Rubens exhibition, the first picture I saw in the show looked very much like something by John Constable. After peering at the label, I discovered it was by John Constable, a full-scale sketch for the Heywayne. This was a shock, as I had happily skipped to the RA, imagining the masses of Rubens' images I was to see. It turned out I hadn't paid attention to the "and his legacy" part of the exhibition's "Rubens and his legacy" title. These small print additions to exhibition titles are always a worry. They can be cover for eking out a few pictures by the master whose name is being used to sell the show, with many others by his followers. So is the case here. In one room there are 17 pictures, of which one is by Rubens and his workshop, one by Rubens and Jan Bruegel the Elder, and a grand total of one actually by Rubens himself. To be fair, the rest are by chaps like Cezanne, Renoir, Van Dyck and Rembrandt. But the show is heavily skewed towards legacy rather than Rubens himself. With my gallery-going companion, it engendered the game Spot the Rubens every time we entered a new room. Curators Nico van Out and Arturo Galassino have hung the exhibition to demonstrate links that they have spotted between Rubens' work and that of immediate followers such as Van Dyck and later artists like Picasso. The show is divided into six broadly defined sections: poetry, elegance, power, compassion, violence, and lust. Each looks at one of the areas of Rubens' work, showing a few of his pieces and a lot of inspired bys nearby. It aims to show the way in which Rubensian elements were taken and used by different artists. In broad terms, the French saw the sensuality and the playfulness in his work, whilst the English were inspired by his rural scenes and portraiture. The Flemish appear to have focused on his palette. Sometimes these links are clear and understandable, such as when Watteau's Fête Galante are shown near Rubens' The Garden of Love. Other times, the stated connections feel forced. In the description of one of Constable's works in the show, the curators claim that Constable's inclusion of a rainbow in compositions such as Cottage at East Burkholt pays conscious homage to Rubens. As proof, they have a Rubens picture that also includes a rainbow. This is a claim too far, though co-curator Nico van Out even says that without Rubens there would have been no Rococo, no Romanticism, no Orientalism, and perhaps even no Impressionism. Much of Rubens' work was on the large side and cannot be transported around the world. The famous Marie de Medici cycle of paintings cannot leave the Louvre and is represented here by a small study. A large projection shows the works in situ in Paris, with constantly moving images that I doubt many will watch for long. Similarly, The Fall of the Damned also cannot travel and is here in a copy by Jordaens. The approach does work well and shows the influence of Rubens on the other artists. Once you are over the shock that most of the work in this Rubens exhibition isn't by Rubens, it makes an interesting stroll through art history. However, whilst championing Rubens' many areas of expertise, the show tries to revise history. It completely downplays the Rubens equals hefty ladies equation. Peter Paul may have had many other elements to his output, but the fact is that his name is not used to describe rural landscapes or portraits, but rather the sturdier specimens of femininity. Many will leave the exhibition feeling that this sensual area of his work was not adequately covered. And so the visitor's path leads directly into the shop and a 1,000-piece jigsaw of tiger, lion and leopard hunt. Rubens was all for copying his works and getting them sent to be seen by as many people as possible. Maybe for once you wouldn't have minded the in-your-face merchandising that always accompanies large exhibitions. Premium Interim Projects is a new show at the Royal Academy. Halfway through their 3-year studies, the 17 artists from the second year of the RA's postgraduate course are exhibiting in Burlington Gardens galleries. It's a chance to see the work of potential art stars of the future, so the flaneur went along to see what we can expect. Molly Palmer's In Addition to Everything Real is first up, a 5-minute video installation carefully displayed in a room with felt curtains. I asked her to tell us something about the work.
It started from something very mundane and sort of everyday, which is there's these lifts in the building that I spend a lot of time, well, where I have a recording studio, and they just were these really enigmatic, like quite rickety, old-fashioned, like 70s, 80s lifts that just seemed to have a bit of a life of their own, and somehow when I would take the lift, I'd always end up having this strange kind of anthropomorphic thing with them, where they would seem to sort of be, you know, sometimes they take like a really long time to come, you have no idea like where they could be, and the numbers just go blank and kind of, you know, and so I ended up having this sort of strange feeling about the building as a sort of organism that had its own like rhythms and ideas about especially about space, actually, about the spaces around you and how our movement through them sort of changes you in quite subtle subconscious ways. And then I suppose it became this sort of jumping off point for quite a fantastical narrative. Like in this section, she's kind of in the lift, I suppose, and travelling between floors, and she's realising her relation to all the different elements of that, but in the end it becomes more of a thing about the spaces inside you and the kind of imagined places and kind of the way that we're privileged to travel with our using our imagination and kind of to create new spaces with all the different elements that are going in, like we build these sort of imagined environments, I guess, and some of those can be quite sort of limitless in a way, because the way your mind has the different strata of sort of experience and different registers of reality, that can become quite a sort of fantastical experience, I guess.
Another artist showing work is Tom Walsvold, whose large humorous paintings fill one wall of the gallery. He told us a little about them.
They're all very recent paintings made this year, made of a lot of different materials like gouache, oil, acrylic, collage elements as well. All based on these drawings that I do. A lot of them are quite personal drawings.
So the drawings are much smaller scale, aren't they?
Yeah, tiny. Yeah. And then I either blow them up or collage them together, and then I never really know how they're going to look at the end. It's kind of like fitting a puzzle together or something.
And do you stick exactly to the drawing, or do you...?
No. I start off, you know, with a kind of composition, and then they end up just running away from me, especially colour-wise. I like a mixture of kind of high and low elements, like comics and cartoon figures, and that's just the way I feel I can speak best.
Several other artists and head of the RA schools, Eliza Bonham Carter, also spoke to us, but owing to circumstances entirely in my control, the audio files have been corrupted. Whoops. Anyway, head over to the back entrance of the RA for this free glimpse of the future. The death penalty has been imposed by absolute monarchs for much less than writing a play with a preposterous plot. Thomas Middleton and William Rowley must have been just a little relieved that after the 1624 performance of The Changeling before Charles I, they didn't end up in the Tower. Revived at the charming, candlelit Wanamaker Playhouse, the co-authored play is a dark Jacobean tragedy of murder and mutilation, but other elements of the plot make even the mistaken identities of plays like Twelfth Night seem highly plausible. In Alicante, the youthful, spirited Beatrice Joanna has been given in matrimony to Alonso by her father. She, however, prefers Alcimero, so plots with her servant, De Flores, to murder Alonso. This, as you might expect, has consequences that Beatrice hadn't envisaged, not least that De Flores demands as payment his mistress's virginity. Middleton borrowed the main story of Spanish nobles from a book of cautionary tales entitled the triumph of God's revenge against the crying and execrable sin of willful and premeditated murder. His peers shared our disapproval of murder, but luckily for him they were much less concerned about copyright. The book had only been published in 1621. Co-author Rowley contributed the exploitative subplot that sees Alibias, overseer of a Bedlam-style institution, worry about the loyalty of his young wife Isabella. At the Wanamaker, Hattie Morahan's outstanding Beatrice is a husky-voiced siren who garners our sympathy even during her murderous plotting. She may act selfishly, but she is a spoilt, uncertain child, rather than an evil Lady Macbeth. Morahan conveys an uncomprehending woman moving from one mistake to the next, amazed at the horrible result each one brings. Modern audiences will lay some blame with her father, Vermandiro, for forcing her into the arranged marriage. Showing more human selfishness and bad judgment than malice, Beatrice grabs at the escape route offered by De Flores. Middleton gave this monstrous manipulator the play's most amusing lines, and with tinkling Welsh brogue, Tristram Gravel makes the most of them, making the serpent a hard-to-dislike anti-hero. Even De Flores is not acting purely from evil, but out of a passion for his mistress that he knows will remain unfulfilled, until he spots a way to put her greatly in his debt. Here, unlikely becomes implausible. Worried that her enforced premarital liaison with De Flores will be noticed by her husband on their wedding night, Beatrice pays her maid Diafanta to take her place. Middleton is asking us to accept that Alcimiro would not notice the switcheroo between his bride and her maid, not from a distance or up on a balcony, much ado style, but in his marriage bed. Here, director Dominic Drumgoole plays with this absurdity. Not only does Beatrice have long hair and Diafanta short, but Beatrice is white and Diafanta black. We do not believe in Middleton's plot device and start to ponder Alcimiro's own hypocrisy. Today, fewer people in the audience will believe the fiddle faddle about an elixir designed to tell whether a woman is a maid. The effects on viewers of other parts of the play have also changed over time. The subplot comments on the actions of the main players by taking place amongst the inmates of a madhouse. In the past, this would have been a jocular interlude. Now we sit in discomfort, not just from the authentic, backless seats, as Rowley's madmen are forced to practice a silly dance for Beatrice's wedding. Britain has become a society happier to witness murder than the mistreatment of the mentally ill, which may or may not be an improvement. With minstrels in their gallery, candelabra lighting, and actors and audience all in a close, intimate proximity, the new Wanamaker Theatre is ideal for a claustrophobic, close-up tragedy. The Changeling, as performed here, is an atmospheric reflection of human behaviour, showing how easily and unexpectedly evil develops. If you're planning something nefarious, and have managed to convince yourself the usual ethical arguments don't apply, the Changeling may make you change your mind. You might not have to sleep with an assassin, but there will probably be side effects you hadn't foreseen. Thanks for listening. You can find more reviews online at www.flaneur.london. See you next time.